This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Before we start this week's episode, here's a clip of Eric Cressy and I where he talks about his upcoming shoulder seminar at Excel. Okay, before we start the main show with John Berardi, I invited Eric Cressy to come on the show to talk about his upcoming shoulder seminar that's actually coming up this weekend. Eric, could you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. It's actually the first seminar we're doing at Excel Sport and Fitness Training, our new facility just outside of Boston, Mass. So we're pretty excited about, you know, not necessarily just the content of the seminar, but also the fact that we're kind of christening the facility. But beyond the fact that we're obviously going to have some great information and stuff, I think it's a great networking opportunity. I know of a lot of great coaches that are coming from around the country. We got people coming from Canada, San Diego, Louisiana for this one-day thing. So it should be a good networking opportunity. But on top of that, I think it's going to be a good event simply because it's I'm probably going to dig a hole for myself by saying this, but it's the stuff that I'm probably the most comfortable talking about. Kind of hits close to home for me because I've had a lot of shoulder problems in the past. And, between my interactions with physical therapists, other trainers, other lifters, and, my own experiences having to overcome these things, I've kind of come across with a different perspective than I think you normally see. You know, you go to a classic physical therapy seminar, and they talk for 4 days with, their slideshows, and, it's all that monotone. It's like the Ferris Bueller's Day Off scene. But hopefully that won't be quite that bad. We're going to talk some functional anatomy, but the important thing is, functional anatomy isn't just like your classic anatomy classes. You're not just, looking and memorizing origins and insertions. When I talk functional anatomy, I'm also looking at, what happens if a muscle isn't doing its job? What are compensation patterns that kick in? What are the injuries that might result? So one thing we're going to talk a lot about is differentiating between pathology and dysfunction. And, as trainers and coaches, we're always spotting dysfunction because they're what happens before the fact. We're not going to do a whole lot with the torn labrum or herniated disc or things like that, but we need to know what to watch out for to make sure that those things don't happen in the first place. And, after the fact, we need to know how to get them better if we're therapists and, how to take people who have come out of therapy back to healthy training. So, there's a big focus on functional anatomy for the first part of the day, but, it's really important to get that solid understanding of, what's important to know in terms of anatomy, because that gives rise to, identifying the dysfunctions and also looking at certain static and dynamic assessments that you can do to make sure that people are on the right track. So, the afternoon session, I think, is where it's going to be the most fun, where I think everybody can really benefit. We're going to be talking about corrective exercise programming in terms of, structural balance and training, understanding how to modify things when somebody does have some history of shoulder problems, and also just kind of, tinkering with things for people who, just want to avoid them in the first place and learning how to deload and all that properly. So we're going to be doing a lot of work out on the floor, going through a lot of the mobility exercises and activation and stability stuff that we do pre-workout during the session, with our clients, and also just kind of troubleshooting your common upper extremity resistance training exercises. I think going through a really detailed bench session is probably exactly what a lot of people need, so we're going to be covering that along with about 15 to 20 other exercises that people commonly err on. So all in all, I think it's going to be a good time, a good blend of kind of the science and the practice, and a great chance to interact with a lot of really good coaches and trainers.
That sounds great. Where can people contact you just if they're curious about needing some more information or they're thinking about coming?
They can shoot me an email through my website. It's ericcressy.com, ericcressey.com. And my address is just ec@ericcressy.com. We can send out some information for them. We've got student discounts in place, so it should be a pretty good time. We kept the cost down because we wanted to get lots of people in the door and just make it a good event to kind of celebrate the first event we have at the new facility.
Very cool. And if anyone out there is looking for some place to stay and you're still thinking last minute, if I somewhat know you or if you listen to the show, just drop me an email because I'm willing to keep a couple people at my house and then we can drive up in the morning. So just drop me an email. You can contact me through thefitcast.com. You know how to get a hold of me around the Fitcast forum as well.
Definitely. And so, if anybody has questions about hotels or traveling or anything in the area, we can help you out through the facility. John Sullivan and I are kind of pretty well versed in terms of the hotels around there. And we're also going to be having a little bit of fun that weekend. There'll be lifting sessions and we'll be going out of town. So it'll be more than just your classic seminar. We'll have a good time.
Sounds good. Is there anything else you want to add, Eric?
No, I think that's about it. I've got the seminar registration right in front of me, but I won't give out all the details of the power. I don't want to lose my own thunder a week in advance, but I think it'll be a good time, so hopefully we can see some people out there.
Well, sounds great. Eric, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
The FitCast crew is going to be there in full force as well, so probably I'll come with some free T-shirts and such. So.
Good deal. We'll have a good time.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming on, Eric.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
Thanks. You too. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Berardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
We can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show? Just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast, episode number 25, our 6-month anniversary. My name's Kevin Larrabee. John Williams is again up in the mountains somewhere, probably trapped under some snow. And I have a very special guest this week. He came on the show on episode number 5. You may know him from Precision Nutrition, Gourmet Nutrition, his articles on T-Nation, and most recently, The Metabolism Advantage. Our guest this week is Dr. John Berardi. How you doing, John?
Doing great, Kevin. Thanks so much for having me on this this first annual 6-month anniversary. how's being a podcast star treating you, man?
Oh, it's been fantastic.
Superstar, probably. Is it superstardom now? I never know the difference. You guys are blowing up.
It's borderline. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
The girls all over school on the college campus are wearing the FitCast thongs. Our dream has come true. We have succeeded. So.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And John Williams told me that everywhere you guys go, girls are trying to get with you. So
all the time.
Congratulations, man.
Oh no. Yeah. Thank you. It's been a great ride. And obviously it's all due to the people out there that have been downloading, hitting up thefitcast.com. So a huge thank you to all you listeners out there, and thanks for just joining us for this 6-month anniversary where we are just going to let it all hang out, per se, I guess. Just try to have a great show, you know?
There's no women on this call or in the studio, I think, so we're not going to let anything happen, honestly, but... But nevertheless, I appreciate the analogy, and let's roll, buddy. This is just really cool, man. I remember when you guys first started the show, and there's people talking about it all over the place, and that must feel good. All I'm saying is that when you guys, you're there now, but when you guys buy the house in Beverly Hills, let me drive your Hummer.
Okay? Oh, definitely.
I'm going to come out. I'm going to be like... the guys on Entourage, and I'm just gonna drive your ride.
Oh, that's a great show. I love that show. Well, in all hopes of that happening, we will jump into the FitCast news, where we actually have some big news this week. First off, the FitCast.com has been redesigned for our 6-month anniversary. If you check it out now, you can actually watch all the video FitCast directly from the site without having to download anything. Big part, and thanks to Google Video. Also, the new FitCast forum is up on thefitcast.com. You can go to thefitcast.com/forum, and you can check that out. It just launched last night. So if you still want to get great usernames, like Mike Robertson might want the Assmaster as his username, he can always get that. And it's just been very cool in the last 24 hours to see people jumping on. At the FitCast forum, there's going to be an episode section where you can discuss each episode. Also, some very cool sections that I haven't set up yet. One of them is going to be called The Interrogation. More on that in the future. Also, article discussion and contests, which will be on the forum only. The contest this week is for a 16-cap container of Spike, which I won in Los Angeles, and I have yet to check out because I already had a bunch of Spike already, so that's going out to you guys. It's brand new, comes with a Spike bullet, and it will give you a ton of energy, and I love those things before
workout. No, not the Spike bullet.
Oh,
really? The Spike bullet?
Hell yeah.
That makes the whole thing right there. I mean, the Spike is great, but there's nothing like wearing the bullet around your neck.
Oh, it's bling. What are you going to do?
I don't know if all the listeners know what the spike bullet is, and so maybe you should give them the heads up.
Oh, well, it's just an awesome, awesome little container where it holds two spike caps. And if you get some nice chains, like some gold or some platinum, you can put it through a little hole in the holder. You can wear it around your neck, wear it to the club. So if you need some energy and you're out at night, you can pop two of the caps and you're ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I do it all the time when I go clubbing.
Blinging. You're blinging, buddy. Yeah, I actually keep my roofie in there.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
I guess maybe I shouldn't have said that on the air, huh?
Oh, like I said, we're just going to let anything happen because it's yeah. 25th episode and it's just going to happen that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I just want to give people something to I guess, type about on the FitCast forums.
Oh, there you go. We'll just have a whole sub-forum for roofie discussion.
Perfect. Hey, man, it's a hot topic.
Anyways, also, the Inside Out review will be coming out on Wednesday, the Inside Out DVD with Bill Hartman and Mike Robertson. I'm going to be reviewing the DVD and the manual on Wednesday. I'm going to be doing a write-up of that on thefitcast.com, so keep a lookout for that. So far, the DVD kicks ass. Makes me love the foam roller, and I already loved it before, but I almost want to sleep with it at night, so right when I get out of bed, I can do some nice soft tissue work.
Oh, okay. Now you're scaring me, man.
Oh, like I said, it's just going to be a weird show this week. But to be honest, it's great, and I actually have already started using some of the techniques on the DVD with some of the swimmers here at Keene State, and they're loving it because their shoulders are shit, basically, and it's really been helping them. And a couple friends I know that they actually weren't able to swim for a couple days because their shoulders were hurting so badly, and some of the techniques on the DVD actually helped them get back in the pool. So, I guess...
Well, you know, actually, I mean, I'm going to throw in a plug for these guys here because Mike actually sent me my copy, and it came shortly after I had just taken a shoulder seminar in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a $300 seminar to attend, basically all about the shoulder rehabilitation, you know, preventative exercise, prehab stuff. And, you know, being fresh in my mind, I got the DVD like 2 days later, and it was just awesome. And for those people who read my website, I put up a big review of it. We had a special running where people could get both of Mike's DVDs, the one he did with Cressy and the one he did with Hartman. And I spoke very, very highly of it because I think it's really tremendous. And, you know, for whatever it is, $50 for the DVD,
yeah.
You'll learn more practical, functional stuff than you would going to a $300 shoulder seminar. So it's just, I think it's awesome. And really, if you buy this and it doesn't change the way that you treat your shoulder, both in warm-up prior to training, in mobility work after training, then you need your head checked because this thing seriously, you know, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're lucky, you'll actually be checking out, if you want to know a little bit more about shoulders, Eric Cressy is having a shoulder seminar this upcoming weekend, Saturday, the 28th. And I'm actually going to be there. A bunch of FitCast listeners are going to be there. It's in... right outside of Boston. If you want more information, Eric told me to tell you guys to email him at ec@ericcressy.com, or you can go to his website, ericcressy.com. That's ericcressy.com, and get some more information on the seminar. And just those three guys just know their stuff so well. I've been able to learn so much from them just the last year, and it's definitely something you want to check out. Oh, and also, if you need some place to stay for the seminar, let me know. If you are a female, send me an email. And my mom, I think, will be okay with it because I live about 10 or 15 minutes away from where the seminar is going to be held. So I was very lucky.
That's a very attractive offer, Kevin.
Oh, I mean, I'll even cook you some breakfast. Denver omelets.
And you'll have to make room in your single bed for her and the foam roller.
Damn right, but if she doesn't like the foam roller, I don't want her there anyway, you know? Because you got to love the foam roller. That's, honestly, that's the best piece of equipment you could have, foam roller. Oh, how off track are we going to get this week? We'll see. but we should probably get out of the news, and we'll jump into the Q&A. And this is
I've got news.
Oh, you do? What's up?
Yeah, man. Yeah, did you even give any news? I don't even think you gave any news.
No regular news this week, just FitCast news. But if you have some news, let's hear it.
Oh, well, first of all, and this admittedly, you probably got more U.S. listeners than Canadian listeners, but for those Canadian listeners out there, I am recently a TV star here in Canada. New television show called Building Bodies has launched here. I think they're in the fourth episode. It's on Saturdays at 12:30 Eastern Time. And so anyway, I managed to convince these guys that I was good on the television. And so every week I have a 3 to 4 minute segment on actually not what I'm known for in this community, but for on training. And then there's throughout the season another two special features, so two different shows with special features where I go through some training of athletes, some nutrition stuff. So it's actually quite cool. So so for those interested in checking out the program, they can go to buildingbodiestv.com. And like I said, it's aired across Canada. And it's a pretty cool show. There's, you know, Matt Nichol, a good friend of mine here in Toronto, strength coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs, has been on recently. They just have a ton of good guests talking about cool stuff. And it's one of those television programs that covers the details that most enthusiasts, for lack of a better word, like us, Kevin, would be into. You know, so not a lot of fluff pieces, but some good stuff. So I wanted to give everyone the news on that. So we had the first episode a couple weeks back, and it's rolling along nicely.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. I remember you telling me about that at the LA Strength Seminar, and it seems like a long time ago, but that's very cool. Absolutely, if someone can pirate that for me and throw it up online, I'll check it out. No, I'm just kidding. Pirating's bad.
That's what we're working on right now, actually.
Do you think there's? Well, do they offer it online? Promoting. Like, can promoting. You watch
We're
clips on the website?
No, they're very protective of their content. But we are here at ScienceLink headquarters working on ways to help them promote their content.
Cool.
Not pirates, but promote their content on the web. So we may be able to do that, but not until the end of the season. So it may be some time for those in outside of the Canadian market. Before we can do that, but we're going to do our best to help them promote the show through the web.
Awesome. I look forward to it. And we'll definitely keep everyone posted.
Now, didn't that sound real positive and nice and anti-internet piracy?
Oh, I don't pirate anything. Come on. Let's be honest. I don't have a Netflix subscription and a DVD burner, I swear.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's like online DVD rentals. You just sign up online and you say which DVDs you want. They mail them to you, and when you're done, you just throw them back in the mail. Then they send you the next two or three, and it just keeps going. And
cool.
It's like you pay monthly, so it's like $20 a month, and just keep sending them back and forth. But again, I don't do that. So
okay.
But that's very cool, and we actually have some news this week. So that means you heard the special news music. Which is very cool.
Perfect. That's the only reason I brought that up, because I did want to get the news intro.
Oh, you got to have it. I mean, this is the 25th episode. I mean, you got to have the news
true.
Music.
Yeah. We don't want to skimp out on this one. I mean, I've got some other cool news tips that we could direct people to if we really want to.
Yeah, definitely. Bring them up.
This is one that I actually just put up on my Precision Nutrition forums, and I don't know if you've seen this news piece, but it was published in The Guardian on Thursday. It was a while back though, and it was like a Thursday in September or whatever. But it's relatively probably recent, new to everyone. Now if I'm saying this and you're like, oh yeah, that's old news, buddy, then everyone could just laugh me off the the monitor. But nevertheless, it's a study performed in Sweden where they're actually kind of, for lack of a better description, duplicating the Super Size Me movie. Have you heard about this?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Yeah, so basically they're taking a bunch of college, or sorry, university students, and they're basically overfeeding them, very much like Super Size Me, where basically all of them have to get sedentary, eating 6,000 or more calories a day.
Oh my
God.
They
want them to do very little, so take a minimum number of steps throughout the day. So they have them using pedometers to make sure they're plenty sedentary. And then they are having them eat double what their energy needs are. So if your calorie balance is at 2,500 or 3,000, you'd be eating between 5,000 and 6,000 calories a day. It's pretty cool for the students because it was actually done through medical school, so most of them are med students, because all their meals are paid for the duration of the study.
Yeah, that's
so
not bad.
They're just getting, they're getting free grub. And the idea is to see what happens when you overfeed a bunch of people to the tune of twice their metabolic needs. So it's a pretty interesting study going on right now. The first sort of pilot portion of the study was completed. And you may remember, Kevin, back in Los Angeles when we did the seminar, I talked about how there's this wide range of responses to overfeeding. Some people don't gain much weight when, even if they overfeed by 1,000 or 1,500 calories a day, whereas other people will balloon up like a blowfish, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we end up seeing is, in this study, the same thing. In the pilot groups, certain individuals were gaining only 5% of their body weight. So if they're 200 pounds, they gain, 10 pounds. Others gained up to 15%. So there's this wide range of response. So it's pretty interesting stuff. So for those people who want to find out more about this study, they can even Google the name of the researcher. His name is Fredrik Nystrom. So it's FredrikNystrom. So it's pretty interesting. It's an interesting read to see what's happening with these individuals. For those intellectually curious, you might want to go check that out.
Definitely. I'll see if I can throw up a link on the fitcast.com as well. That's extremely interesting. I wouldn't want to participate in the study, but I'd love to check out the results.
Well, actually, in Los Angeles, there's a guy there who is a power lifter, he was an attendee. And I remember Carter's my head strength coach, we're having a chat with him. He was talking about how he had bulked up, I think, 60 pounds over the last 6 or 8 months. So he was just sort of like the average lifter, reasonably strong, decent physique, and he really wanted to push the boundaries with gaining muscle size and strength. So he got on a West Side-type powerlifting program, and he started just eating, right? And he was a young kid with a fast metabolism, and he ended up gaining 60 pounds, but he literally was force-feeding day and night, like nocturnal feedings, just finding ways to eat as much as he could, almost like the pre-version of Dave Tate, right? And I remember Carter and I were joking around how we were jealous that we weren't able to eat like that, because there's something enormously satisfying to me to be able to just eat as much food all day long as you want and gain like 60 pounds in the quest for ultimate strength and size, unfortunately my 30 plus year old body wouldn't be able to tolerate as well as I would have in my 20s, so it's not going to be a reality for me, but it's kind of interesting. So nonetheless, I mean, this sort of no rules, no restriction kind of approach to weight gain.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. But I don't know. That's something I kind of did the past couple months while I was doing my first bulk. And now that I'm cutting again, it's almost feels good to not be eating so much, which honestly feels weird, because...
Oh, yeah, no question. You're almost kicking yourself in the head because when you're, like, when you're dieting, you're like, oh, God, I'd love to eat more. And then when you're bulking, you're like, oh, God, I'd love to eat less.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? I just didn't like the feeling of eating all the time. And now that I'm actually cutting again, I feel great. Like, I'm looking forward to my green beans and my broccoli, and I'm looking forward to my chicken, and it's just...
You're just like Goldilocks. It's the porridge is either too hot or too cold, man.
Thanks for referring me to a female. But anyways, that's fair. That's fair.
That's all right. You sleep with a foam roller.
Yep, I'm sleeping with a foam roller. But hey, you know what? I'm in college. I still have some time, and we will see what happens. I will keep you all posted with the female relations in the future. Check out next week's newsletter or something. I don't know. But do you have any other pieces of news?
No, I think we can. I think we can move on to the Q&A right there. I mean, there's always little tidbits in my head, but maybe we can bust them out as we're doing Q&A if we need to.
Well, I did actually see another study for people supplementing fish oil and actually being able to do better on their studies while supplementing with omega-3s. I don't have the story in front of me, but again, it's just one more story that makes you want to supplement with fish oil, which is great.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, just we did have a couple stories in the past saying that it helped with prison inmates control their moods and also as an alternate treatment for people with ADHD, when they took fish oil, they didn't have to take Ritalin or other supplements that would otherwise give them harmful effects. By just taking fish oil, it seems to have so many benefits that we're just discovering right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's true. For those people who want to read up more on the topic, you got to check out Alan Logan's book called The Brain Diet. Alan's a good friend of mine. We work together in a number of projects, and we're on a couple different research boards together. And Alan has a bunch of studies reviewed in his book. The premise of the book is that there's a huge link between nutrition and mental health, but, I mean, he covers everything from gut health and immune function as well. But in the book, he covers exactly what you're talking about, Kevin, where there's these studies showing that fish oil, actually multivitamins, too, in different populations. One example is grade school children. Another is prison inmates. And showing just these really big epidemiological type changes in everything from mood. So in prison inmates, they're calmer, less incidence, to attention span and test scores in different populations. So there's some powerful stuff there. Now, you know, for everyone listening, the typical listener of the FitCast, I'm assuming, either takes a multivitamin, takes fish oil, or has a pretty good varied diet. So for them, it's not saying, you know, load up on fish oil if you're not such a bright guy or girl and you'll be smarter, but it's just saying that there are these deficiencies out there in certain populations. And, you know, correcting the deficiency makes a huge difference in everyday performance. And so if you're an individual who's always thought, oh, maybe I should pay better attention to my nutrition, but haven't yet, it really may work for you. You know, there may be some really, really marked measurable benefits that you notice with fish oil, multivitamin, protein supplement, whatever. So I think that's an important message.
Absolutely. So make sure to take your fish oil, your multivitamin, and go to bed at an early time, which I hope to do tonight, but we will see.
And say your prayers, according to my early mentor, Hulk Hogan.
Obviously, yeah. How's Hulk doing? He's got Hogan Knows Best now. Did you guys get that in Canada?
Yes, but I've only watched it once. I did think I threw up in my mouth a little bit when I was watching it, but it's like the Osbournes show. You know, there's like these guys who for a good segment of the population in their younger years were sort of, you know, like entertainment heroes or whatever, and then you kind of see them like just going through the mundane everyday annoyances that we all do. I just can't bring myself to watch these kind of programs.
That might be best for everyone not to do. Stay away from reality TV as much as possible.
Yeah, man.
But without further ado, let's jump into the Q&A with John Berardi. Could you tell us what drove you to write The Metabolism Advantage? And also, could you tell us a little bit about the content in the book?
Sure, no problem. Actually, The Metabolism Advantage is a project that probably started before I ever started writing fitness and nutrition materials. It's a project that started before I ever thought I'd get into this industry. When I was 20 years old, and this is actually from the intro of the book, I remember kicking around the gym and, you know, training hard, working out. And I just remember people approaching me, some, you know, people in their 30s and 40s who would come up and say things like, oh, yeah, you better enjoy being in shape now because when you get to my age, it all falls apart. And so, you know, they were giving me their sort of embittered cautionary tales of how bad things get, you know, glass half empty stuff. And I just remember, you know, at the time wondering, is this the case? You know, am I going to work out for 5 or 10 years, spend all these hours in the gym towards getting a great body, learn how to eat properly, to only have all this dissolve and fall apart in front of my eyes as I got older? Definitely a scary prospect. So, you know, the seeds of this book started back then, and now that I, you know, have a PhD in the area, now that I've published a lot on the topic, you know, I decided that it was time to really do a thorough treatment of the subject. And, you know, there's a lot of great research out there right now investigating what happens with the metabolism as we age. What is the metabolism? You know, how do we pin some of these things down? And it was about time that someone kind of delved into the literature and put together a really comprehensive treatment on what is the metabolism, what happens as we age, and how can we prevent this inevitable fat gain and loss of function? I mean, because, you know, people blame getting fatter as they get older on a slow metabolism, but other things that can occur as a response to slow metabolism is a change in the metabolism of bone, which ultimately can manifest in things like osteoporosis, a change in the metabolism of muscle, which ultimately results in what we call sarcopenia, but it's basically muscle wasting as we age. So we see these people who are older who have weak, brittle bones. They have small, weak muscles, you know, and they're gaining body fat. This is all part of the, you know, what I call metabolic mystery to them. And so the book is essentially me doing sort of a detective project, kind of tracking down and solving the metabolism mystery, if you will.
That sounds great. Where can people get a hold of the book?
Well, the book is actually nationally distributed now. So we have, you know, it's at Amazon.com. It's in most major bookstores across North America, as well as in Europe. It's currently being translated into a couple handfuls of different languages. So it's really being universally distributed. People can find it anywhere, but I usually refer people to the Metabolism Advantage site, which is www.metabolismadvantage.com. And the reason is, over there, not only can you download the table of contents, you can also download the 2 mystery bonus super chapters, which never made it into the book. So that's kind of an exciting thing. There were 2 chapters that we did that we couldn't get into the book, not because they weren't good, but because I wrote them after the deadline for the book. So they include a bunch of bonuses, bonus programs, a whole bunch of other things. And so what we did was we made them available online. So when people come to Metabolism Advantage, they can get a flavor for the book and also download the free bonus chapters. And then if they're into it, if they like the style, they can go buy the book wherever. So it's something that that I like people to do first. So go to the Metabolism or metabolismadvantage.com.
That sounds great. Is there anything else you wanted to include?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot of people have wondered, you know, I talked a little bit about the, you know, gaining fat as we get older stuff with respect to the Metabolism Advantage. And I'd like to give people even, you know, a bigger taste for what's happening in the book, and also what's happening with metabolism as we get older. You know, in addition to the motivation I talked about earlier of figuring out, you know, this metabolic mystery, you know, the fact that I'm getting older myself means that, you know, I was even more motivated to come up with solutions to the metabolic puzzle. I think there's nothing so powerful as sort of enlightened self-interest, especially when it comes to self-preservation. And since we're all in the same boat, where no one's actually getting younger, no one's immune to this knowledge or the what's happening behind the scenes with the body. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, what is happening? You know, so as you get older, what's happening with metabolism, etc.? And essentially what's happening is from ages 25 to or 30 on, so throughout the lifespan, once you hit 25, for some people it's 28, for some people it's 30, there's a 20 to 25% reduction in 24-hour metabolism, so the amount of calories you burn over the course of a day. So by the age of 65, this reduction continually increases to the point where you lose between 500 and 700 calories of metabolism per day, which is quite a lot. I mean, the average person's resting metabolism might be 1,500 calories a day. Calories a day of metabolism is huge. If you want to break it down per decade, people see about 5 to 7% drop in metabolism per decade. So it's quite a lot, and often this is coupled with a 5 to 10 pound loss in lean body mass per decade. So that's what's happening. People are, you know, 25, 30 years of age. Each 10 years of their life, they're losing 5 to 10 pounds of lean mass, 5 to 7% of their metabolism. So by the age 65, they've dropped, you know, 20 to 25% of their metabolism. So, I mean, what's happening there, or why is it happening? Well, there's a couple of factors that play in. One, people are less active. And the second one is that in an attempt to cope for this lower activity and the fact that they see themselves gaining weight, they eat fewer calories. And they eat the calories that they eat at the wrong times. And then the last thing is they lose lean body mass. So when you couple these things, less activity, fewer calories, less lean body mass, that's a prescription for a metabolic crash. It basically comes, you lose, you know, your 5 to 7% metabolism per decade, and you just simply can't cope with maintaining your body as it once was in your 20s. So that's essentially what's going on. And then the next logical question is what to do, right? So we have sort of a 5-step approach in the book. One is you got to build some muscle. Two is you've got to maximize the afterburn effect of exercise. So we're going to assume that you have to exercise. But the second part is you maximize the afterburn effect, which is the calories that you burn once you leave the gym. So we've got a prescription for that. Next is maximize the thermic effect of feeding and the cost of feeding on your resting metabolic rate. Basically, there's certain foods and there's certain nutrient intake models that help you really ramp up your calories burned. Next is you have to make your training inefficient. And when I say inefficient, I mean that you have to have regular program alterations, because the longer you do a single program, and I don't just mean a very specific set of exercises. I mean a certain set and rep range. I mean certain stressors on the body. When you do the same program consistently, you adapt to that program, it becomes less stress on the body, and there's less cost of dealing with that stress. And what ends up happening is you become very efficient at doing it, and it costs less calories to do, both while you're at the gym and after. So you have to make your training inefficient. And then the last one is you have to boost your exercise and non-exercise metabolism. And this, you know, one interesting thing is a lot of people who are a little older tell me, well, John, you know, that's great that your metabolism, you know, is, you're saying that it's tied in with activity. But I never worked out when I was younger, and I work out now, and I weigh more, and I have more body fat. What the hell's going on? And the answer is typically, now, you know, there may be other issues at work here, but for most people, they assume that activity means going to the gym, and that's not what we're talking about only. People typically are less physically active in general. They burn less calories just doing stuff. When you're in your late teens, early 20s, people tend to just do more non-exercise activity. And then as they get older, they maybe take more sedentary jobs, etc., and they burn less non-exercise calories. So the key is to boost both exercise and non-exercise calories. So when we do these things, build muscle, maximize afterburn, maximize the cost of feeding, create our training so that's inefficient, and boost our metabolism both with exercise and non-exercise activity, we see a pretty powerful benefit. And, you know, we talked earlier about the 5 to 7% drop in metabolism per decade. What we find with individuals who exercise throughout their lifespan from 25 to 65 years of age, we find that their drop is only 0.36% per decade.
Wow.
So for those individuals, you know, tracked from 25 to 65 years of age, as long as they stay as physically active. So in one particular study, they were runners, and so they ran over the course of their lifespan from 25 to 65. They still saw a metabolic drop, but it was very small. It was, you know, where the average person loses 5 to 7% of metabolism for a decade, they only lost 0.36. So that's just huge. It's such a huge preservation. And these guys were just runners. That's it. You know, so if we talk about the other things, building muscle, afterburn, thermic effective feeding, inefficient training, etc., you know, we can actually preserve the metabolism and even increase it over the course of the lifespan if we're doing the right things. So, you know, all of this sort of leads into having a great approach. You know, we're not essentially at the mercy of our, you know, age and metabolic rates. We can actually do proactive things to preserve them. So, you know, like the people that would come up to me when I was 20 years old and say, "Hey, man, you enjoy it while it lasts because it crashes later on." They were actually wrong. You know, it may crash if you do nothing, but if you do the right things, it can actually improve.
That's very interesting. The first one comes from Andrew. He asks, "I followed your get shredded diet for 8 weeks, and God bless the man for following that for 8 weeks. I could never do it." And he also ended up getting down to 8% body fat. After getting to this low of a number for the first time in his life, his next goal is to maintain a body fat percentage of 9 or 10% for 6 months to a year. He says he knows maintaining body fat levels has a lot to do with calories, but what macronutrient split would you recommend for someone wanting to remain at this level of leanness?
Yeah, it's a great question. I really like Andrew's phrasing, because you notice that he appeased all of the would-be diet gurus by saying, "I know that calories matter, but is there a macronutrient thing that I should be concerned with as well?" So that the guys who say, "And nothing matters, it only matters about calories," are appeased, and the people who say, "Well, wait, you know, there's probably a composition effect too," they're appeased, and they might want to offer an answer. So I commend Andrew on his phraseology there. And actually, I went and worked out with the female today who just finished 8 weeks on the Get Shredded diet herself, and she had some tremendous results also, getting down to about 12% body fat from probably an 18 to 20% starting point, maybe a little bit higher, I think. It might have been closer to 22. So she had great success, and yes, was also able to tough it out for 8 weeks, so congratulate everyone who can do that. And, you know, I mean, it really is simply a commitment to something, you know. I see a lot of people saying, "Oh, I can never do that type of plan." I don't know, part of me says, yeah, I understand, it's hard, it's rigorous, it's demanding, and the other part of me wants to slap them and put a dunce hat on their head and send them to sit in the corner. You know, there's, yes, it's hard. But if you're following the Get Shredded diet, it must mean that you have some desire to change your body. And, you know, in the beginning, if you are kind of far from your goals, it often takes a rather large change. It's like the principle of inertia. A body at rest tends to stay at rest, and one at motion tends to stay in motion. So it's, you know, when it comes to an intervention to change your body very positively, it sometimes takes a large intervention to make that happen. So anyway, not to get off too far on a tangent, I think that, you know, people like Andrew, people like this woman today. I think it's awesome that they did what they did. And for all the people who sort of complain that they can't do it, I think they just need to take a look inside about what commitment means to them.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus, I mean, it's only 8 weeks. If someone lives 80 years, I don't need to be a math major to figure out that that's a hell of a lot of weeks on this earth. To do 8, you know, on a calorie-restricted diet, my gosh, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, anyway, I mean, not too off topic here, but let's get back to Andrew's question, which is how does he transition off the Get Shredded program? Well, I actually wrote an article about that called Getting Unshredded, and that's published at TMag, and it's also, I gave my readers a heads up weeks early on my Precision Nutrition forums, and it basically talks about the ways to transition off any sort of hardcore or any extreme nutritional plan like a diet or something like that. And, you know, if I had to talk about what needed to be done to transition off Get Shredded, here's sort of how I look at it. First, we have to look at what happens. What happens when you follow something like the Get Shredded diet? Well, number one, there's a drop in metabolic rate, okay? Any restrictive diet causes a drop in metabolic rate. Any carb-restricted diet can do the same thing quite well due to signals that are sent out as a result of either glycogen depletion or glycogen content of the liver. But in the end, we see a drop in metabolic rate. We see a drop in thyroid and anabolic hormone concentrations. We see a drop in body water, which is pretty pronounced. We see a big appetite. So when people are eating a low-calorie diet, they get a big appetite as a response. It's just the body's preservation mechanism. And we see that when they eat a lot of carbs, they get an exaggerated insulin response. Okay? So this is how I go about thinking about physiology with respect to nutrition. So what happens when you're on Get Shredded? Well, you drop your metabolic rate, you drop your hormones, the anabolic and fat-burning ones, you lose water, you get a big insulin response to carbs, and you got a big appetite. So then you look at, okay, so with all this taken into account, what do we do, all right? Or maybe even first, what can we expect if you go back to normal eating? Well, the first thing you expect is a huge rebound in body water if you add in a ton of carbs right off the bat. Now, although that doesn't necessarily hurt your progress or set you back to where you were, the problem with that is that a lot of people perceive that their results are gone. Okay? So you see people who will be on a low-carb diet, they'll start eating carbs, and after 2 or 3 days, they'll be like, oh my God, I don't tolerate carbs, I get so freaking fat. Right? And the reality is it's just body water. You don't get freaking fat in 2 days. Okay? So what's happening, though, is that they get this nice sheen of body water, a nice layer of body water over their muscles, and where they seemed so lean a couple days ago, now they seem so puffy a few days later, and they think they're just a fat pig, when really they're just holding extra body water, and that's to be expected. So that's the first thing that happens. The second thing is that after the first couple days, because when you're done with a low-carb diet or, you know, really energy-restricted diet, your first couple days of carb intake actually are fine. You store all those carbs up in the muscle and the liver, and you're good to go. But after that, you have a period of poor carb tolerance. So again, you can get pretty fat over the next few weeks if you don't really moderate your carbs and let your body readjust to a carb intake. So going back to Andrew, you know, we talked about what happened when he was on Get Shredded. We talked about what can happen that can both mess with them psychologically and physiologically. Now we talk about what to do. Well, the first thing is to increase your total calories, okay? So you've got to start boosting your calories up. And it's one of the hardest things to do after being on a restricted diet because you feel so good, you've had this great progress, you feel so lean. So to increase calories at all is often difficult for people, okay? But you have to do it, and you have to do it fairly slowly. So you get a nice slow increase in calories while managing your carbs. When I say manage carbs, I mean cycle your carbs, okay? So what I'm essentially saying is that for Andrew, there's no macronutrient intake that's going to be optimal coming off of Get Shredded because it should be different every couple of days. Because when you're cycling your carbs, what you're doing is on, let's say, day 1 off Get Shredded, you'll have a higher carb day. And then day two, you'll have a lower carb day, and then maybe three lower carb, and then four higher carb. So all of a sudden, you've got a rotating macronutrient intake, and you've got a rotating calorie intake. And the trick here is that essentially you get carbs some days, so you refill, but then you take the carbs back down so that you're sort of depleting again. Then you refill and deplete. So you're never giving your body a strong signal to store fat after your restrictive diet. And then the last thing is add in a bit of extra cardio, okay? Now, if Andrew's been doing a ton of cardio, are the police coming to get you in the background, buddy?
Sorry, I live right off campus. Is a hospital, and even with the window shut, I live right on the street. So,
nice.
It's either that or they found what was inside my closet, which may be a dead body or it might be some weed growing. We don't know, but
oh, or it might be a piece of extra lean meat that you accidentally dropped.
That's fair.
It's the smell.
That's this week's trivia question. What is in Kevin's closet? So
perfect. Perfect. Well, it's good to know that the law has finally caught up with you and your deviant acts. back to Andrew, though. so again, we're talking about increasing calories slowly, also cycling the calories and the carbs, and doing a bit of extra cardio, okay? And, that's sort of stage one. So I really encourage Andrew to jump on, read the Getting Unshredded plan, and learn how to come off the Get Shredded diet. After 6 or 8 weeks of transitioning back using this strategy, then the last step is figuring out what physiological type he is, whether he's a high-carb type, a mixed type, or a high-protein, high-fat type, which would be also a lower-carb type. And eating correctly for that body type. And I've written a bit about that. I will be writing a lot more about that in the near future. But it's essentially figuring out what your sort of a physiological type is and eating accordingly. Some people handle carbs very well, so they need a higher carb diet where they would sort of eat moderate protein and eat a little bit less dietary fat. Others do really well on a mixed type zone diet, and others do really well by keeping their carbs quite low. So depending on your type, this is how you break it up. But, I can't know that about Andrew yet. But what I do know is that coming off of getting the Get Shredded, you need to do the Get Unshredded plan where you're cycling carbs, cycling calories, and you're just managing your body weight change after this pretty extreme diet.
That sounds great. That's something that everyone should check out, the Get Shredded diet. I think it was one of the greatest articles I've read this year. And that's saying a lot. And I haven't yet tried it. It looks really tough. Like you said, it's just something you gotta stick to. And from what I've heard from people that have been on it, they've had fantastic results, like unbelievable results. So just my hat's off to you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that. I mean, the strategies are nothing new, revolutionary, whatever. They're just time-proven ways of getting lean and preserving muscle mass while getting lean. And, I did a very specific pilot with this plan with Dave Tate. I did it myself. I did it with a couple of my training partners here in Toronto. And everyone had seen, an average of half to 1% body fat loss per week on the plan. So it just rips body fat off fast. And again, the key is that it's not something you do long term. It's something that you do for short periods of time to lose a bunch of body fat and then get back to normal, healthy, balanced eating.
Very good. We'll jump into the next question that comes from Steve. And he has a very interesting question about super shakes. He asks, have you ever come up with a recipe for a super shake that was so vile that you never, ever dare print it for fear of being sued? I don't know what he meant about being sued, but you did debut a pretty crazy super shake way back on episode 5. What was like the most extreme super shake you've ever come up with that?
Yeah, I think that Steve is one of those guys who likes to stop at like car crashes along the side of the road and look for severed body parts and decay. I'm not really sure what's up with that question, but actually I have created some vial lens. You know, this all comes part of experimentation. But there was actually one that I made not too long ago where I really wanted to push the envelope with veggies, right? So I wanted to create this, like, this super shake that was just loaded with fresh veggies. And so I put, like, you know, I don't remember the exact formula, and that's probably the problem. I didn't have any plan. I just kind of rolled into the kitchen, busted out as many veggies as I could, put them in the blender, and prayed to God. And it, God was not good to me that day. It created this just mess of, like, thick, fibrous drink, right? And the worst part was I was also, I've been working on a top secret nutritional supplement lately. I can't spill the beans on it too much besides to say that it is a fat loss product that, you know, has no stimulants in it, but attacks fat loss from all the different angles that could be a problem for people struggling with fat loss. So it attacks it from the thyroid function angle. It attacks it from insulin sensitivity angle. It attacks it from the cortisol angle. It attacks it from appetite suppression. So there's a bunch of different ways that it attacks fat loss. So anyway, I've been working on this with a company. And so the initial stages of this have been as, I guess I'll say, strenuous to the palate as the initial stages of Surge were. And it was real nasty from day one. It has a high concentration of a couple bitter herbs in it, and oh man. So anyway, I actually included this in my really vile veggie super shake. So it was just a fiasco from when I hit the blender on to trying to drink this thing. And for once in my life, I was not able to complete the beverage.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know if Steve will like that answer. I am a little bit scared of Steve now, but
well, he's from the UK, so maybe that explains something.
Oh, okay, yeah, probably, okay. For sure.
Well, Steve hasn't checked out the soda shakes. I mean, no one's talking about those anymore. I thought those were going to blow up. I thought that was the next big thing in the fitness industry was diet soda shakes, but
it didn't work out.
No.
Now, when you and John get on the show, do you guys still drink a shake during the episode?
We do sometimes. If it's a very special super shake, we do bring it up, but it seems like the past couple months we've been so busy we haven't been, and that's a really bad excuse, but we've just been lazy.
Man.
And we've been doing shakes of, like, for a couple weeks, my shakes were I'm having 2 scoops of Metabolic Drive in water.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. That's not very super.
No, it's not. And
that's like the below average shake.
Oh, yeah, I know. But see, I have my Greens Plus separately in cap form. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Helps a
little
bit.
Well, you know, actually, you can one thing that I've been doing lately is because it's tough to include anything, a lot of veggies except for the ones that are usually kind of tasteless that blend up pretty nice. Like spinach blends in pretty nice to a shake.
Mm-hmm.
Gives it the green color, but it doesn't really taste like much. Some people have actually said, you know, and dealt with broccoli fine as well in a shake, although I've tried it. It's all right. It's not my favorite. But one thing that you can also do is you can juice your veggies, or you can juice fruits as well for super shakes too. Now, I've talked about juicing in the past as not the absolute best option because you lose some of the fibers associated and some of the other micronutrients associated with the fruits and veggies, but still it's better than nothing. And it's certainly a step up from, you know, water or whatever. So one thing that I do a lot of is juice veggies and then make shakes out of that because you get rid of that nasty fiber that can really ruin the shake.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just get a ton of veggies. If you add something like a vanilla Metabolic Drive protein to it, it tastes really good. So, you know, that's another option. I actually had one today, which was a little bit more fruity, although I hesitate to say it like that in the future. it was a beet. So I put a whole beet in my juicer. I put an orange, an apple, and one carrot and one celery stalk. So a celery, a carrot, an orange, an apple, and a beet. And then I put some flaxseed oil. And so what I did was I juiced them. Then I put them into the magic bullet. And then I put in some protein, and I put in some flaxseed oil. And it was really good.
So you used the magic bullet?
Oh, yeah.
I should get one of those.
Oh, the thing's wicked.
And it works great for even working on those tough vegetables?
Yep. Well, actually, with the veggies, like, you've already juiced them, right? Like,
okay.
So
yeah,
I have a juicer. So I juice them, and then I switch the juice to the magic bullet. So the bullet really doesn't have to display its raw power with this kind of drink, right? Because it's only just juice and protein. But the bullet is pretty good with ice. It's good with mixed nuts. The thing that's cool, I sound like the magic bullet infomercial here, but the thing that's good with the bullet is that, like, the containers are small, right? So you can just, like, ground up a half a cup of nuts in this little thing, right? You can bring it with you. It's really portable. And the other thing is that they come with these cup attachments, right? So you basically screw the cup right onto the blender portion. You juice the thing, you flip it over, you screw the blender part off, and you just drink it right out of the cup.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, what, like, to a society not as time-starved as ours, that's probably not a huge selling feature, but, you know, whenever you can save me, like, 0.5 seconds, I'm down.
Oh, absolutely.
So anyway, yeah, so that was my, I actually had that super shake today. It was really good. We'll warn all the listeners, though, the next time you void your bladder, don't call your doctor, your general practitioner. Like asparagus, which imparts a characteristic smell to the air, the beet super shake imparts a characteristic color to the urine. So be forewarned.
Very interesting. That almost compels me to try it out tonight. Just to see what my urine will look like. But
yep, we're letting it all hang out. I don't know why we're so fascinated by the urine, but I don't know. Maybe I had a theory on that. I think it's because when we're kids and, you know, we're being potty trained or whatever, our parents, like, give us so much praise for, you know, have a successful poop or whatever. See, I said it. I think every episode I have to talk about the bodily functions. But
you said you weren't going to do it this time.
I know, but I couldn't help myself. See, this is it, man. I must have gotten extra praise when I was a kid for going, you know, to the potty successfully. So I think we have these psychological programming there.
Yeah, anyway, there's some more material for the forum people. So. Oh, well, that's very cool. And just, I'm going to have to think of some really good super shakes in the next coming weeks and get going on that again. And hopefully John Williams will be back and he'll give me some inspiration as well. And we'll just move on to the next question. Nice. It comes from Brian. He says, it's hard sometimes to think of new and unique snacks that are precision nutrition compliant. What kind of precision nutrition compliant snacks do you eat on a daily basis? Are there any that you eat as a change of pace?
Well, I don't really follow precision nutritions. I'm just kidding. No. That would be kind of bad, wouldn't it? No, I mean, there's a ton of them, but the reality is I don't use a ton of them. I mean, there's only three or four that I consistently eat. I mean, obviously the Super Shake is one of them, and I use those often because they're quick, they're easy. I mean, you get a ton of nutrition with them. I mean, something as simple as like an apple, some peanut butter, and a scoop of protein in juice or water, it works, right? I mean, you don't have to think of, I mean, you don't have to be an artist to create, you know, snacks. The mixed nut bars from Gourmet Nutrition, I eat quite often, and I'll usually just have like some veggies on the side with those. Another snack that I use a ton for traveling is I'll just cut up some carrots, some different colored peppers, have string cheese, maybe beef jerky, Another thing is like mixed nuts with string cheese and veggies. You know, these are all just quick, easy snacks you can put in Ziploc baggies you can take with. You know, I wrote an article a while back about solving the greatest nutritional dilemma, which most people come with, and it's that, you know, oh, it's so boring eating the same things every day. And I still, maybe I've just been doing all this for too long, but it still drives me, I still don't understand why people want, or, you know, how they get bored with sort of, or they want this bounty of limitless meal selections, because in my experience, like, they don't ever use all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, you could give someone 100 freaking meals and they'll use 4 consistently. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm not dissing on Brian in any sense of it, but you know, the reality is just pick like 3 or 4 or 5 of them, and those are the only ones you're going to use anyway, so just stick with them. So don't use like, oh, I don't have a lot of snacks to choose from as an excuse for not doing the right thing, eating the right foods, you know, when you should be eating them. But like I said, you know, it could be as simple as an orange, a scoop of peanut butter in a little Tupperware dish, and a protein shake. Or, you know, you make a beet juice vanilla protein cocktail, or mixed nut bars, etc. You know, so there's a bunch of little things, but I think sometimes we get into this thinking of, oh, I need to create like a new cool PN-compliant thing. Well, sometimes why don't you just pick a protein food, a veggie, and a good fat food, and just stick them in the Ziploc baggies and just snack on them. And that's what they are, snacks, right? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of my answer on that one. You know, it's rare that I see people like eating a different snack every day for, you know, 2 or 3 months, rotating through 100 of them. It's usually we stick with the old standbys. So, you know, maybe what Brian's saying is he doesn't like any of the old standbys. And so he needs some other options, but maybe he could kick that out on the forum and people can chip in, because I know there's a ton of people listening who have Precision Nutrition and who use it and who have come up with answers themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, crack open Gourmet Nutrition. I mean, come on.
Yep.
Gotta love that.
I'm with you, man.
That's very good stuff. We'll jump into the next question that comes from Darren, jumping back into the topic of fish oil. He asks, fish oil supplement dosage is always an arbitrary number and usually different every time. What should a 92-kilogram lifter from, say, the Channel Islands be taking daily? Does it matter if it's in one go, or does it have to be spread out through the day?
The Channel Islands.
Yeah, I don't.
There's actually a new study out showing that those from the Channel Islands actually need a lower dose than those in Canada, for example, or Florida. I think there's a region specific fish oil need. So we'll speak specifically to Darren's place of residence and address that. I'm just kidding, Darren. In terms of fish oil, he's actually kind of right. You know, you hear about different experts seemingly arbitrarily picking, and the reason is because the research is very conservative. You know, the research recommendations are, you know, take a couple hundred milligrams of EPA and a couple hundred milligrams of DHA to sort of prevent deficiencies in these things. And so that's fairly consistent, and you know, in the research that they choose very conservative numbers. And for me, you know, I think that probably 3 grams of fish oil per day, so we're just talking about 3 1-gram or 1,000 milligram capsules, is enough to prevent fish oil deficiency. But I don't think it's enough for optimal function for everyone. You know, I'll give you a couple examples. Personally, I take 12 grams a day. So I take 12 little fish oil capsules a day. Some of my clients, those with poor insulin sensitivity and a lot of inflammation problems, will go up to 20 grams a day of fish oil, so 20 capsules a day. And you know, and anything in between. So when it comes to picking, assuming Darren doesn't have any issues with inflammation, doesn't have any issues with insulin sensitivity, and the rest of his diet is fairly balanced in fats, which is pretty critical, then, you know, he may only need, you know, a capsule with each meal or something like that. However, these are a couple of huge caveats, right? One, that his fat intake is balanced across the board, so he's got a good spread of omega-3s and 6s. He's got a good spread of monos, polysaturates, right? And like I said, that's a tall order. Darren may have his nutrition really dialed in, which is great, but if he isn't paying attention to that really closely, then he may need more fish oil just to balance out an imbalance in the rest of his nutritional intake, because you can treat fish oil as like a pharmaceutical prescription. So, hey, take this amount of grams or milligrams and you'll get this response. But the other benefit of fish oil is the ratio of omega-3 to the rest of the omega-6s and the other fats in the diet. And I like a 1/3, 1/3, 1/3 split of polys, monos, and saturates, and I like a half and half split of omega-6s and omega-3s. I think that those ratios help to regulate hormonal balance, body composition, etc. So it's beyond just taking a pharmaceutical dose of fish oils. It's also helping to balance out the other fats. So, you know, for his case, I'd say at least 3 grams of fish oil a day, okay, unless he's, like, feeding at the mouth of a river. He may need more. If inflammation's a problem, if insulin sensitivity's a problem, he might have to go up to 12, 15 grams a day. And if he doesn't have his fats balanced, he may need more. So, you know, this is a way to think about it for those curious, you know, how much fish oil should they take, right? If your diet's really dialed in, you might only need 3 total grams a day. If you have inflammation and insulin sensitivity, you might need as much as 20 a day.
Sounds great. That's something that a lot of people do need cleared up. And, I mean, he does live in the Channel Islands, so maybe he is right next to a body of water and he can just stick his head in.
Yeah.
But we'll let Darren figure that out. The next question comes from our good friend Galia, and she asks, do you have any advice for helping clients that have a hard time losing fat because they are on antidepressants? Those people have it hard mentally. Oh, I'm sorry. Those people who have it hard mentally and physically, so it's a challenge to work with them.
Yep. Yeah, it's a really good question with no easy answer. You know, when it comes to antidepressants, they have a powerful physiological effect on the body. Okay. No. You know, I mean, we know that. There is documented research showing that they can often promote weight gain. And what we've found with our clients, and it's been validated in a number of other individuals who do what I do, and we've had conversations about this, is that not only does it necessarily just promote fat gain on those new users, because presumably there's going to be people who are working out really hard already while they go on an antidepressant, it seems to slow down progress or fat loss in people in which that's a goal. So let's say, for an example, you take a client who's training with you, you're their trainer, or you're just providing programs for them, and they start on an antidepressant. It may not necessarily cause them to gain weight, but it may very well prevent the rate of fat loss that you'd expect. And one thing that I have commented on before is that the first question we ask clients when they've been training with us with our individualized coaching program for, let's say, a month and haven't seen the type of progress that we expect, or let's say 2 months, the first question we ask is, are you on antidepressants? And the reason is, there's two reasons. One is that's what we found consistently to be the killer of progress in people who were expecting a better rate of progress in. And number two, people aren't always forthcoming with the fact that they're on them. If they're on a blood pressure med, no hesitation to tell us. If they're on an antidepressant, there's still a little bit of a social stigma attached to that, so they're a little bit afraid to be forthcoming with it. So that's why we ask the question 1 or 2 months in if they're not seeing the results they should expect. So just to set some folks have no decay in their rate of progress when they're on an antidepressant. For others, it stops them in their tracks. I mean, there's no better way of saying it. And what do we do in that case? Well, there's sort of a physiological and a psychological component. The physiological component is we try and switch meds, okay? So we work with their physician to try and switch the medications. There's a number of antidepressants out there, work through different mechanisms of action, have different specificities for receptors. So some meds do better than others. So what we do is try and get them on a med that's more friendly to fat loss. And I haven't seen a consistent med that, you know, that there's specifically one that everyone does better with. So it's just a matter of trial and error. The same goes for birth control in women. Some women tend to store more body fat in their triceps and in their thighs when they're on certain birth control prescriptions. Okay, it's sort of those are the estrogen dependent fat depositions in their body. And so what we end up seeing is sometimes when people go on birth control, they'll gain fat, regional specific, in triceps and thighs. And so what we'll do in those types of individuals, if they're an elite athlete or a figure competitor, we'll try and switch their birth control meds. So same thing with antidepressants. The psychological component is this. You've got to really work with these clients so that they don't wrap up all their hopes with their fat loss, like all their hopes with feeling better. Because there's a number of clients will come to us and they'll be, you know, they'll have this sort of mood disturbance. They'll have a bit of depression, and they'll think that by just getting in shape, all of that stuff will go away, okay? And it isn't the case. So we have to be really careful in what we can promise clients in terms of results, and we have to be really careful not to wrap up all their hopes on getting better in the exercise, because there's probably other issues at stake there. So it's just a delicate situation all around.
That's some great information. That's something that all trainers out there should keep a lookout for. And we will jump into the longest question ever on the FitCast.
Which one was that?
It's from an anonymous person. They had a screen name, but I was looking for their first name, but I wasn't able to get it in time. And I'm just going to do my best saying these lines, and we will see what happens. I have sort of a specific question about protein. I am studying to be a dietitian, and as many of you know, the American Dietetic Association recommends a 0.8 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight and slightly higher for athletes. Now that is much lower than any of us take in. I was arguing about this in class and looking for research on both sides. Apparently, there's no reason out there that supports this 0.8 grams per kilogram. Is the right amount of protein? I'm sorry, that 0.8 grams is the right amount of protein, and the only reason it is because it is used is because that a minimum at See, this was tough because this is a long question. No more long questions, guys. It's because that's...
Are you still talking?
I'm sorry. I'm going to... Well, he wraps it up at the end. Because that's the minimum a sedentary person needs to starve off a negative nitrogen balance. My question is this. Thank you. We're finally getting to it. Is there no research to support that exceeding one's protein minimum is dangerous? If not, then how can the ADA make the recommendation and claim that high protein diets are dangerous? And this is very interesting because I had the same exact argument in a class just 3 weeks ago. So I'm looking forward to hearing your response.
Well, I'm going to disappoint everyone and give the shortest answer ever. Read my articles. Read the Protein Prejudice. Read the Protein Debate. And read Dear Mom and Dad. All three articles can be accessed on my website, johnberardi.com. So go there. There's a search box right at the top of the screen. Look for Protein Prejudice, the Protein Debate, and Dear Mom and Dad. This topic has so many angles, and in the protein debate, I debated for what was probably like 8,000 words with a researcher here in Canada, a fellow researcher who studies protein as well, and we debated to essentially, some people think he won, some people think I won. I didn't think it was one of those types of competitions where there was a winner and loser. My impression was that, you know, in the end we concluded that there's still a lot of questions that remain to be answered. But, you know, if we can duke it out for 8,000 words, it'd be hard to answer the question completely on just a quick Q&A. But in the end, the reality is this. There is some good evidence to suggest that those individuals that are working out on a new training program, okay, so you just start a new program, causes a lot of muscle damage, need more than the RDA of protein, okay? However, there's also some evidence to suggest that for those who've been on a consistent training program for a long period of time, they aren't causing a lot of new damage, etc., need less protein than the RDA. And that's, you guys heard me right, less, okay? But this is all to prevent a negative nitrogen balance and a muscle wasting, okay, or wasting of body proteins. So what we're looking at is essentially, you know, enough protein to prevent malnutrition. And I've said it tons of times before, what I'm looking for is an optimization of intake, all right? Now, it's very difficult to define optimal. But to me, optimal is what protein level do my clients get the best results at? And that's really all I care about. I don't care about nitrogen balance when it comes to changing someone's body, all right? I'm a scientist and I'm a researcher, and I spend part of my life in that world. And in that world, my conclusion has to be, well, athletes need, you know, 1.8 grams of protein per kilo, etc., okay? Because that's the extent of the literature currently. But, all right, and this is a big but, just because the literature is limited, all right, doesn't mean that this is the end answer. And I believe that somewhere down the line, we're going to find out that different individuals need different protein intakes. For optimal health, protein intakes may need to be higher, etc. So, I mean, I can't give a really concrete answer. I can only say that there's some good data to suggest that there's no major problems associated with higher protein intake than the RDA, that there's individuals who definitely need higher protein intake than the RDA, and that there may be a point where you need considerably more than even the general recommendation for athletes for optimal function. Beyond that, there's just a lot of guesswork associated with it, okay? The ADA's position, I can't really comment on it. They are basing their recommendations. I can say this much on there is research to back up the 0.8 grams per kilo, and it's based on what is needed to prevent malnutrition in the average person. Okay, the reality is not all the countries of the world have the same surplus that we do, have the same financial wealth that we do, and have access to protein-rich foods. So a lot of the studies that have been done are designed specifically for some of these third world countries to ensure that their population is getting enough protein to prevent death from protein malnutrition. So that's a completely different scenario than what we're talking about here. So the World Health Organization has done some of this work, and it shows that, hey, when you're in a third world country in extreme poverty, what is the minimum protein you can give these people, right? Because they can't afford it anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're figuring out in these studies. So, I mean, there's a lot of sides to this question, okay? And like I said, I've written thousands and thousands of words on it. So my best advice is go read this stuff. My second best advice is don't get into a stupid debate with every person that you talk to about protein intake. Okay, it just still drives me nuts. And Peter Lemon, who is my graduate advisor, was one of the first guys to suggest people needed higher protein intake back in the 70s. And back then, none of his work, when it was initially submitted to research journals, was published. His work was rejected for about 4 years before finally it was accepted for publication, and it sort of changed the face of what we know about protein intake needs for athletes, right? So, even back then, there was a debate, and it's, you know, continuing. It's really interesting, and when scientists can't agree, it fundamentally tells you that more work needs to be done, not that someone has the right answer. So there's no question more work needs to be done, but in the interim, I'll tell you my opinion, and it's that people often do better on a higher protein intake than the RDA or even the generalized athlete needs, and that's based on my experience with clients and my successes with clients.
I'm really just happy that you didn't just say it depends, because that would have sucked. But again, it seems like that's something that's going to be debated for a while, and something that I look forward to seeing more research on.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, with basic critical thinking skills, you realize that when a lot of smart people can't agree on something, there has to be some missing piece of the puzzle that they don't know yet, and something that hasn't been verified or confirmed. What it also means is that they're speculating, okay? Data can only get you so far in the world, okay, in terms of the truth, all right? Data only takes you to one point, and then beyond that, it's all speculative leaps for practical recommendations. Research is often more weighted towards basic research, which doesn't tell us, you know, how Kevin Larrabee can get lean or big or whatever, you know? It only tells us about basic physiological things that are happening in certain populations. So we have to make extrapolations from that and guesses, okay? And we base those guesses on things that feel right to us, things that sound good to us, based on the data, of course, and on what we've seen work. And fortunately for me, I've got a database of thousands of clients I've worked with over the years, and I've seen what works in them, and I keep pretty meticulous records. So, you know, my guesses are based on those things. So again, like I said, when you find a lot of smart people disagreeing on certain things, okay, consistently over decades, it means that we don't know the answers yet, and people are making educated guesses, okay? So if the smartest people are making educated guesses about it, the scientists who are actually doing this research, then I just don't understand why a couple of undergrads would get in a heated debate as if either of them has the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So I just, like, you know, I get 1,000 emails a week about this. Like, hey, man, I got into an argument with a stupid dietitian who said this and that. Well, I think you're equally stupid for getting in the argument, you know, because it's not something that you need to step into the ring on. I mean, you don't know the answer either. They may be right. You may be right. Both of you may be wrong, you know. Both of you may be right in certain circumstances. So I just, it happens a lot on the forum. It happens a lot on the web, where people will take these really, really confident stances and then start just disputing with everyone, you know. And I think that's what's fundamentally flawed about these discussions in the first place.
You gotta love the internet forums, especially the fitness ones.
Oh, yeah.
But this will bring us into our next question, which is another interesting topic. It comes from Frank, and he asks you, what are your thoughts on the Velocity Diet, which is another extreme diet that people have heard of from T-Nation and Chris Shugart?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, the Velocity, let's just be really, really clear, okay? The Velocity Diet is a quick-fix starvation diet, all right? Now, I'm not saying that with any pejorative sense, okay? I'm not saying that as if, oh, well, that means Berardi thinks it sucks. I'm just saying that it's a quick-fix starvation diet, okay? So what is it, all right? You are eating probably 1,000 calories a day or less, and for fairly large weight-training men, that is starvation. That's the first thing. Second of all, it's a quick fix because you're only supposed to do it for a couple weeks or a month, all right? So, I mean, a lot of people don't think of it in these terms because, well, it's been popularized by some people who aren't into quick fix diets. Well, the reality is it is a quick fix starvation diet. The same type of diet we all reef on when Weight Watchers comes out with it or some celebrity comes out with it. And I don't understand the double standard in our industry. Just because a celebrity, you know, backs a quick-fix starvation diet, it's crap. And just because Chris Shugart or John Berardi or whoever backs a quick-fix starvation diet, it must be good. Now, obviously, there's certain things, right? It is solid in terms of protein and fiber. So it covers, it does its best to be a quick-fix starvation diet that covers some of your nutritional needs, right? So that's a good part about it. And, I mean, if you think about it, some people need a quick fix. All right. Some people are very overfat, and this is the only thing that'll get the momentum moving in the right direction. Okay. In that sense, I think it's fine. So let's just put everything into its proper category. Velocity diet, quick fix starvation diet. Is it good or bad? Depends on who you are. Okay. I think it's fine. if we want to highlight the strengths of the diet, A, some people need a quick fix, like I said, to overcome the inertia of being overfat, sedentary, not eating well, etc. Okay? That's the first positive. The second thing, if you follow the story with Dan John, it teaches you something about self-discipline. Okay? It teaches you that, hey, man, if I can do this, all right, I can do a ton of other stuff, whether it's with my body, whether it's with my business, whether it's with my relationships, etc. Okay? If we go into the con side of the equation, though, it teaches you nothing about healthy eating for life. Absolutely nothing. Okay? Well, maybe I shouldn't say absolutely, because if you've learned discipline with respect to eating, then it has taught you something positive. Okay? But with respect to healthy eating for life, it hasn't taught you anything. Because if once you get off the Velocity diet, you have to start cooking 5 healthy meals a day. You have to start eating vegetables. You have to start figuring out how to do non-protein shake proteins. You know what I mean? How to start choosing real food selections consistently. It's taught you nothing about how to do that. So that, to me, is sort of a drawback. So overall, I think it's all right. And in fact, the other day, a friend of mine called me. He's a personal trainer, and he's got a client, and his client is a contractor, and he is super busy right now, okay? He had followed Precision Nutrition for about a year, got really tremendous results, but now he's been really, really busy and hasn't been able to fit it into his lifestyle, okay? And, I mean, you can sort of chastise him for not doing a good job or not finding creativity or solutions or whatever, but the reality is it's just not happening. So I even recommended him do the Velocity diet right now, okay, because he needs to lose some extra body fat, he isn't getting it done, and he is in a busy season of the year for his work, so he's, you know, doesn't anticipate being this busy forever. So for now, it's a nice quick fix plan for him to lose some fat. And it's really simple for him right now. So I actually recommended it in that situation. However, if someone were to come to me and say, I need to learn how to be healthy, I need to learn how to be lean for the rest of my life, it's not something I'd prescribe. Because the simple truth is, it doesn't teach you how to eat to be healthy and lean for the rest of your life. It teaches you to do something so divorced from normal, healthy, you know, whatever you want to call it, precision nutrition style eating, the zone type eating, whatever. It's so divorced from that, it's not even like the same thing. You know, you're drinking protein shakes, and you've basically removed food preparation from the equation, or food decision making from the equation, and you've removed it from your life. And when you have to start making those decisions again, you haven't been taught anything. So, you know, pros and cons to it. You know, I think it's great for overcoming the initial momentum associated with not doing anything. I think it's great for short periods of time if you're having a problem with getting down the discipline and the lifestyle. But I don't think it teaches you anything about the lifestyle. And you still have to learn some new stuff when you go back to eating normally.
Absolutely. And by all means, Dan John, way to stick it out.
He did a great job.
After talking to him in L.A., he sounded like he was ready to just flip out because he was so, like, just looking for some solid food. But I think everyone's read his latest article where he talked about that a little bit. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. He did a great job. And, you know, it was great for him because it overcame the inertia of a couple decades of slowly making nutritional compromises. And for Dan, what he learned through doing the Velocity diet, he's parlayed into learning next how to eat well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after Los Angeles, you know, now he has a copy of Precision Nutrition. Now he's on the forums. Now he's watched the DVDs and listened to the audio CDs. And now he's learning how to do that. I know that Alan Cosgrove is helping him out with it as well. And now he has Precision Nutrition stuff, and we've shared some emails. So, you know, for him, now he's taking that next step to learn how to eat healthy for life. So for him, you know, God bless, he's done it right. He's just done it in two different stages, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's pretty critical.
Very good. We'll jump into the final question. And again, I don't have a name for it, but I'll ask it anyway. When approaching nutrition, what aspects require more individualization than others to make it successful?
Yeah. I actually read this question. I think it was on the FitCast webpage, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It was actually a really great question. I know you summarized it, so we didn't have two really long ones.
I have trouble with those. I'm sorry.
I was going to make a bad foam roller joke, but we'll leave it alone. The question was essentially with strength training, you know, sometimes sort of just a generalized strength training protocol can work and get great results for people, although individualization is often better. Is the same the case with nutrition? And I think yes, the answer is yes. I think that nutritional individualization is important in a number of situations, okay? First, if you are striving for elite, if you want to call it elite results, then individualization is critical, okay? You're not going to look like the cover of Men's Health. You're not going to look like a competitive bodybuilder. You're not going to look like, you know, a competitive fitness or figure model without nutritional individualization. You're just not, okay? So for elite results, you need individualization. There's no question about it, okay? That's the first scenario. The second scenario is that if you're doing the basics and it's not working, okay, so you're following the basic principles of good nutrition, like the 10 habits or whatever, okay, and also proper training, all right? When I start talking about nutrition, people can sometimes turn off their part of their brain that deals with the training aspect, thinking that they're going to develop a really great body just through really paying attention to their nutrition. They may think they're doing the right stuff for training. You heard me go on a tirade about that in Los Angeles, Kev. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a really important part of the puzzle with training as well. So you have to get them both right. And if you're doing the basics, okay, and not all of the listeners are qualified to know what the basics are, that's sort of something critical. You know, I see a lot of just kind of recreational people going at this, and they pick and choose from the good principles of training and nutrition, where they simply haven't been exposed to all of them, and they think they are covering the basics when they're not. But assuming that you are, and you're not getting the results you should be expecting, then individualization is the next step. So it's either when you're striving for elite results, or you're doing the basics and not getting good results. Now, the caveat with the second one is that there's very few people who follow the basics well enough to make that judgment, okay? There's tons of people who are like, oh, I just can't get great results, and they're just not doing, you know, 20, 30, 40% of what they should be doing to get results. So they think they're doing a great job, but, you know, it's sort of like taking a test in university and being allowed to grade your own paper, you know what I mean? You get no external feedback, and you're going to think you're doing a freaking fantastic job, and maybe you're not, you know? So I think those are the situations where individualization is critical. With that said, though, I mean, there's a good percentage of the population that just does fantastic reading the 10 Habits article. You know, just following the 10 Habits, consistently exercising properly, they get great results. And I get emails all the time. I get as many emails from people who've read my articles and sort of never bought a product of mine. And I probably should never say this because it's going to kill my business. But I get as many emails from people who've just read an article or two but have really committed themselves to application in terms of positive testimonial feedback as I do from people who've bought my stuff as well, because what they've done is they've just gotten the basics and nailed them, and then they don't need anything more. And then these are often the people who actually get to the point where they can actually consider thinking about their body in terms of getting elite results, and then they'll do the individualization aspect. So, you know, to answer the question, you know, there are a ton of people out there who don't need individualization. You know, they just can eat well, have a good body, and follow the basic principles. However, if that's not working or you want more elite results, then you need to learn about individualization. So those are sort of the two steps. And it's almost like a beginner to intermediate advanced model, right? Beginners should probably learn the basics and just follow them and not get worried about all the fine-tuning details. Okay, should I take 0.8 or 0.7 grams per kilo of carbohydrate during my, you know, cardio? this is beyond the basics. This is the individualization stuff where I think you should just follow the basics and see what happens, you know? And there's a ton of people who can do really, really well just doing that. Okay, so then the next step is to individualize.
Very good. And that wraps up our Q&A and pretty much wraps up the longest episode in the history of the FitCast. We're coming in at almost 2 hours, which is very cool.
Are we really?
Yeah. Well, see,
oh my God.
Time flies when you're on the FitCast. It happened during the first time you came on too, but
that should be your first. That should be your next T-shirt.
Oh,
time flies when you're on the FitCast.
We'll see. We gotta get some.
Yeah, no, it's pretty mediocre.
Well. Before we go, I just want to say thanks to my sponsor, Craig Ballantyne at TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. Don't forget to check that out. And also, don't forget to check out the Metabolism Advantage, Precision Nutrition, and even go to JohnBarardi.com and check out the site. Just so much great information there. It's unbelievable.
Can't
get enough.
Thanks for the plug there, buddy.
Oh, no,
yeah,
by all
thanks
means.
Thanks for the plug there.
but
also, I'm going to plug one more thing because I want everyone who has a copy of Precision Nutrition to start getting excited because in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we're about to launch something for all Precision Nutrition owners, which is absolutely amazing. It's going to be – there's actually two things. One is a bunch of free add-ons. So we're adding on 5 manuals to the Precision Nutrition program. And we're also adding a video application on our site, which is going to blow everyone away. We've kept it under wraps. I'm not even going to tell people what it is yet, but they're going to be blown away. So everyone who's on who's bought Precision Nutrition, who has a copy, should definitely start visiting the forum. We'll give an announcement, but they got to start checking it out really soon. And then for those who don't have it, they've got to get a copy. I mean, literally, you get the already 5 manuals with it, plus Precision or Gourmet Nutrition, plus the 2 DVDs, plus the 2 audio. Now you're going to get the video application on the forum and 5 new manuals. And I'll tell you who authored them. One is Dave Tate. 2 is Christian Thibodeau. 3 is Eric Cressy. 4 is myself and Coach Carter Schofer, who works with me. And 5 is a female named Krista, who runs a training website for women. So we have 5 new manuals offered up by some of the top guys in the industry. And it's all part of buying Precision Nutrition. So something real exciting. We're going to put out an announcement in about 2 weeks, maybe even sooner. And, it's all done. We just have to go live with it. And it's something I'm super excited about. And everyone who's seen the preliminary portion of it in my inner circle here absolutely loves it. And I think so are all the FitCast listeners and all the Precision Nutrition owners.
That's nuts. And this is all just for picking up Precision Nutrition. Like, this is, like, everyone who's seen the video FitCast review episode, you know, I think very highly of this. This is a must have piece for everyone out there. And, I mean, now you're borderline crazy if you do not pick it up. No, I'm serious. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, no question.
But, wow, thanks for mentioning that. I didn't even know that, so.
Yeah, this is my first official announcement of it. I know I'm being a little bit cryptic, but that's because I don't want to spill the beans just yet. I just want people to start getting excited. And if they're not getting excited, at least marginally interested in figuring out what's about to come out. Because I can accept marginally interested right now, too.
That sounds great. And really looking forward to that. And everyone, keep checking out the Precision Nutrition website and make sure to get a hold of that. I'm pumped now. Like, just hearing those 5 extra manuals, I mean, that should sell you right there. But anyways, that should pretty much wrap it up for this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 25. I just want to remind everyone to check out thefitcast.com for all the show notes. Check out the FitCast, the new FitCast forum for discussion of this week's episode, and to sign up for the contest for the BioTest Spike, which everyone loves. And I guess that will pretty much do it for our six-month anniversary. I really have to thank Dr. John Berardi for coming on the show and answering all these great questions that everyone out there provided. So without further ado, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I am Dr. John Berardi.
And we will see you next time on episode 26. Thanks again. And
keep letting it all hang out, Kevin.
Oh, I plan to. I am going to do that right now. Thanks, John. I'll see everyone next time. Thanks again for listening. By far the longest episode we ever did, but I think that's honestly a great thing because it is the 6 month anniversary, and I know that's kind of like.
Did you ever watch the show Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I've only seen like 4 or 5 episodes.
Well, there's this one episode where Larry David is, you know, the premise, and he's the creator of Seinfeld or whatever. Well, he came out with a movie. I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it, but. Anyway, one of his wife's friends comes on and he asks her, "Oh yeah, you barred that movie. Like, what did you think of it?" And she was like, "Well, it was a good movie. I really liked the length. It was good length." And he's like, "Oh, you liked the length, did you?" He's like, "Well, how about the width? Did you like the width of the movie?" So when you're like, "Yeah, that was great. It was like the longest episode ever. I feel like I just got complimented on the length of my movie and the width."
Well, there you go. I mean, that sums up this week's episode, I guess, pretty much.